Welcome to Community Forum, a weekly call-in program produced at the studios of KSKA. Opinions expressed are those of the guest, host, and callers, and do not represent the views of KSKA, the licensee, or the underwriters. And now, the host of Community Forum, Nellie Moore.
Good afternoon. It's a fantastic day here in South Central Alaska once we get a little more rain in here and ease that dust down. But we've got some dusting down we're going to do here in the studio. My guest today from District 25, Democratic Representative Mike Dugan from Spinard. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Nellie. Good to be here.
How was the session? You're a former journalist here, well-known columnist for the Anchorage mm-hmm. Daily News, and there was a huge uprising when you left, and then you turned to political life, and now you're down there in Juneau with all those people you once wrote about.
Yep. It was a real experience, all right.
You can't just say that.
Actually, I didn't get along too badly with the people that I used to write about. There's a whole bunch of stuff that when you're down there as a journalist, you don't pay very much attention to that actually turns out to be fairly significant in terms of making a session run. It's simple things like how do you make a motion and all of that kind of – there's sort of a big quotient of formal stuff that I had to learn.
Mm-hmm. Like Robert's Rules,
yeah, all of that
paperwork,
all of that kind of stuff. You know, there's a little book that's the
that's
the legislature's own set of rules. You know, that you've got to learn, and then oh yeah, don't even get me started on the state paperwork. You know, so you have to figure all of that out, and you sort of have to figure out how to get along with people who you don't really have very much in common with either in terms of your life or in terms of your politics.
Mm-hmm. And have a working relationship.
Right, have a working relationship with them, and then how to not eat so much in the legislative lounge that you gain 20 pounds like I did.
Well, probably only because there's no supervision in there. I mean, isn't it just like legislators only and some staff?
Well, it is legislators only, and they never really heard of anything like a diet meal or anything. So you're essentially eating for lunch what you'd be eating for dinner most places.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all this stuff, you know. There's, particularly at the end of the session, you get into a lot of, like, stress eating. There's candy every place. And,
yeah.
You know, people are all revved up. You know, they're
yep.
nervous. And they
trying to stay energetic.
Yeah, keep that sugar in their system. So there's imagine the dentists make big money out of an operation like that.
You're listening to Community Forum on KSKA today. My guest is Representative Mike Dugan from District 25. It's a live call-in show if you're listening in the afternoon. Give us a call if you'd like to join in, if you have any questions or comments for Mr. Dugan. Our telephone number here locally is 550-8433. That's 550-8433, or outside our toll-free is 1-800-353-5752. That's 1-800-353-5752. Don't forget, if you're listening in the evening, you can't call in because the program's been pre-recorded. What was one of the most surprising things to you when you went down to Juneau as a freshman legislator?
Well, the thing that surprised me initially was I hadn't realized how many people just want to give you stuff if you're a legislator. And I'm not talking about brown bags full of money or anything, but just, you know, stuff. And I had decided, because I'd been a journalist before I went into politics, and we had a rule at the newspaper that you just couldn't take anything from
mm-hmm,
anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I decided to follow that rule myself because it was simple. You know, you didn't have to decide, do I take something from this person or that person? You know, and as much as you can want to say about the fact that there's no sort of quid pro quo, there always is one. So I wouldn't take anything. And so I found myself like the kids who came from UAA had some sort of like Seawolf scarf that they wanted
oh,
to give
no.
me. And I found myself giving that back. And, you know, so I was sort of
couldn't you donate it to charity?
No, it's just, you know, I sort of being the Grinch about all that stuff, which isn't very pleasant mm-hmm. personally. But, you know,
they're not in your district anyway.
Well, but the thing is, I just don't think you can do that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't believe that people ought to take stuff that comes to them just because they're a legislator.
I wanted to talk to you about that. I took a look at your website and your special end of session edition,
uh-huh.
and you talked about changing culture.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's something that people are going to be, if not thinking a lot about, they're going to be talking more about, in the days that are going to follow and leading up to and through all of the trials and tribulations that mm-hmm. we're going to live through with all this corruption business. And what did you mean? Of, you know, you're thinking about changing culture when you think about Juno. How does it apply?
Well, there are basically, at least in my view, there are sort of two ways that you can control human behavior. One is you can pass laws, you know, which is sort of what we do in the legislature, and which is what we did this time. We passed a big fat ethics law. And that works in terms of putting down on paper what it is people can and can't do, and the punishment for them if they do it and get caught, basically. Mm-hmm. But the real way to affect human behavior is something else. It's culture. You know, I don't know what it was like when you were growing up, but when I was growing up in Fairbanks, which was a much smaller town then, there were just things you did or you didn't do. And mm-hmm. it wasn't because it was the law. It's just because of the way people behaved. And if you did one of the things you weren't supposed to do, somebody would come and say, you know, we really don't do that kind of thing around here. Mm-hmm. So you probably shouldn't do that again.
Yeah. And or that, if they weren't able to tell you, they'd tell your parents.
Yeah, or they told your parents, and your parents would make a more emphatic point yeah. about it. At least mine would. But there really isn't that kind of thing going on in the legislature. You know, everybody says, well, look, everybody gets elected. You know, it's really up to the voters. Well, frankly, the voters aren't there to see what people are mm-hmm. doing. And the fact of the matter is that if the people, you know, the people who've been around there for a long time, who I sort of think of as the real bearers of the culture, would simply have taken some of these folks who are in the soup now aside when they first started acting up and just said, hey, look, we don't do things like that around here. I want you to stop this.
Mm-hmm.
And if that had been reinforced, I think we would have had, you know, we'd seen fewer indictments and we'd just have less of this kind of ethical trouble that we seem to be having at the moment.
Why do you think that was? Was it because of?
I don't know. You know, when I was a kid and I worked down there back in the 70s, there was a lot of sort of, you know, sort of wild behavior going on, but not that kind of stuff so much because there were still people there like, oh, you know, I think of John Butrovich from Fairbanks, who mm-hmm. would sort of say you're not supposed to do that.
It was a scary guy from Southeast, Bill Ray.
Yeah, yeah, Bill Ray. but that seems to have just, you know, a lot of being a legislator is learned behavior, and I guess people just quit learning that was the way to try and enforce standards, which I think is too bad. And so I'm doing my little bit to mm-hmm. try to change that. You know, I'm mm-hmm. not taking stuff from lobbyists and, you know, I'm not going out to dinner with them, and I'm trying to be as much like the guy I was before I got elected as I can possibly be.
Which I think is one big reason why you got elected.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, at least I hope people knew who it was they were voting for. But I just do that because it fits for me, and also, you know, sort of in terms of what I hope it does in the wider world is I hope that it gives people in the legislature the idea that there are different ways to behave, that you don't have to act, you know, in a way that puts you in these sort of difficult or potentially compromising situations.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to talk a little bit about those. You mentioned dinners, but I think they're pretty common, aren't they? Like an organization like the Southeast Loggers or Timber
yeah.
People or some oil organization or almost every organization that has any money will put on a dinner or something.
Yeah, there are two kinds of things going on there. One are what they call receptions, mm-hmm. you know, and lots of different people have these receptions. You know, essentially everybody's invited. You go down there, you know, they have like finger food and you know, sometimes free alcohol, sometimes not. But the idea there is that legislators show up to eat free food and they get access to them while that happens. And those things, I don't go to those either. I'm not entirely comfortable with them, but I can understand the argument for them, mm-hmm. you know. But then there are these, you know, lobbyists taking people out to dinner things. And, you know, frankly, I don't ever think anybody is going to get bought for the price of a dinner in Juneau, even at a fancy restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
But what it does do is it gives the people who are paying the tab, you know, a couple of hours of unlimited access to legislators. And I think to myself, you know, my constituents don't get that.
Right.
You know, if somebody comes from the district and they're in Juneau, you know, I might be able to spend 20 minutes or half an hour with them. you know, but my workday doesn't allow me to spend a couple of hours with them. And so why should somebody essentially be able to purchase a couple of hours of access to a legislator, regardless of, you know, what actually happens to those 2 hours? It just doesn't seem right to me. It seems sort of out of balance.
You are listening to Community Forum on KSKA. Today, my guest is Representative Mike Dugan. Give us a call if you want to join in. It is a live call-in program. Our local number is 550-8433. That's 550-8433, or toll-free 1-800-353-5752. That's toll-free 1-800-353-5752. We were talking before the show, and I guess your wife Kathy went down there with you. And was it pretty easy getting living accommodations and all that this session?
It was okay. Yeah, it wasn't too bad. You know, the situation in Juneau is that, you know, there's a fair amount of rental property there that they rent during a legislative session to legislators and staff and people like that. And then, you know, around about the middle of May, they have the people who work the tourists who come through on the cruise boats come into town, and they rent to them too. So you can find something. It's a little bit more expensive than it would be here in Anchorage, I think. You know, but it's okay. We had a little condo over on Douglas Island, actually, across the bridge from Juneau, and it was fine. You know, it's sort of like camping out. You know, it's pretty temporary. You know, you're only going to be there 4 months. Well, 3 months, I guess, next session. You know, so. There are certain things that if you were living there year-round, you might fix that you learn to live with and that kind of thing. But, you know, it's not too bad.
As far as being there and being a new legislator, I know as a journalist, you've done a lot here in Alaska, and you know a lot about Alaska. You've written books, for Pete's sake. But were there things that you learned about, you know, other parts of the state as a result of being in sessions and in committee hearings that you were surprised about?
Well, one of the things that I had always known about but really hadn't appreciated that much was the fact that people think about politics like it's Republicans and Democrats all the time, right? But in the legislature, really a lot of the politics are regional.
Right.
You know, it's about people from Southeast who get together regardless of political party because they want this, or people from rural Alaska who get together regardless of political party because they want that. And so, you know, sort of figuring out the regional spin on all these issues is difficult and pretty interesting, actually. You know, but it's a fresh reminder that people in other places outside the city are really looking for pretty basic stuff a lot of the time, and that they don't have that pretty basic stuff. There were people who came in, I guess if it was the Yukon Flats School District, I'm trying to remember, there were a bunch of, you know, different school districts came through. And they were talking about some money that they were trying to get to fix one of their schools, and they had some pictures of it. You know, and it was the sort of thing that if you had pictures of it in Anchorage, there'd be like a riot.
Revolt.
You know, yeah.
Parents would be protesting.
People would be protesting. They'd be picketing, all the rest of that. And
if there was even one honey bucket in an Anchorage school, I think there'd be closed.
It just makes you realize that you know, that not everything is like you see it when you're driving around in Anchorage, which is, I think, a good thing to know. And the other thing is, boy, some of those rural districts are huge.
Yeah, geographically.
You know? I went and knocked on every door in my district twice. I could walk the district. I did it twice during the campaign. You know, somebody like Woody Salmon has got a district that goes, you know, that takes up.
It's like the West Coast or something.
It's not half the state, but it's probably a fifth of it. It's probably 20%. It might be 25% in terms of the geography of it. And
is that Georgiana Lincoln's old district?
Yeah, it's part of it. Albert Kukesh is actually the senator there.
Okay.
And then Woody's got the biggest part of that as the representative. And it's just remarkable. I mean, there's like three completely distinct native cultures in his district. Plus, you know, there's some pretty fair-sized white road towns there. You know, you think about sort of how do you deal with all of those differences, and the fact that every time you talk about a school, you're talking about not just a school, you know, having a couple schools in your district. You're talking about in school in every little town and village there. You know, so it's pretty challenging.
You're listening to Community Forum on KSKA. It is a live call-in program in the afternoon. Our guest today is Representative Mike Dugan. Our local number is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Or our toll-free 1-800-353-5752. We're going to go now to Sandy in Anchorage on line 5. Welcome to the show, Sandy.
Thank you. Mike, I was just wondering if you thought, because of the blatant backroom politics that seem to take place in Juneau, if there's ever a chance and a good more reasons to move the capital from Juneau because it's so isolated.
Well, I'm not sure. I think that a legislative session that was in Anchorage or Wasilla would be different from a legislative session in Juneau. I'm not sure it would be better. You know, one of the things about Juneau is if you're there, everybody sees what you're doing. People, that wouldn't be the case in Anchorage. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'd like to be able to go to legislative session and go home sleep in my own bed. But the fact of the matter is you get into the bigger population and things get sort of more diffuse. And that would change the nature of the session. I think it would be more difficult sort of to keep your eye on what people were doing. Which wouldn't necessarily be a good thing.
And it's a big deal for a citizen to ever go to Juneau to plead a case or monitor the activities.
Yeah, it's different. We do this thing they call introduction of guests before every legislative session, where if you've got somebody from your district, basically, or it's somebody you know, you introduce them. So, you know, it's sort of a formality. And I probably didn't introduce half a dozen people from House District 25 because, you know, my constituents aren't generally the ones who do that much traveling. They'd have a better chance to keep an eye on me, I think, if we were meeting in downtown Anchorage, for instance. On the other hand, the logistics of that are going to be difficult. It's going to be pretty expensive. If you were going to actually move the Capitol, no matter what anybody says, you'd have to build some kind of legislative building to do it, just to have rooms big enough to put, you know, 40 people and 40 desks in for the State House of Representatives. I think it would be different. I'm not necessarily dug in against trying it to see what happens, but I'm afraid that it wouldn't really result in the kinds of changes that would make the government better that a lot of people claim that it would. You know, because if it did, we wouldn't be having these problems in Washington, D.C.
Mm. Okay, thank you.
Sure.
What about that aspect of, now that Sandy's brought it up, of, there's a state office building, the SOB, and it's a huge facility, and it's got a big underground, and it's got like quadrillion state workers in there. Would some of that have to move too? I mean, it seems like a lot of those people, at least commissioners, are on call for hearings.
You'd need to have basically all of the people who make the legislative infrastructure work would have to move. Mm-hmm. Everybody who knows how to run a session, for instance, lives in Juneau now because that's where they'd happen. Where they happen, you'd have to either hire new people and train them here or get those people to move. Plus, you know, we have lawyers who work for the legislature, we have researchers who work for the legislature, and we've got, you know, the people who sort of make sure the lights stay on and the parking lot gets plowed. They'd all have to move.
Mm-hmm.
Plus
the voting board. You were just talking about that.
Yeah, you'd have to relocate all that stuff. Plus, then you'd need a significant number of people from the administration to be in whatever town you were in for the session while the session was on. Commissioners, they have legislative liaisons. You've got experts who have to – you want to have come and testify on certain kinds of bills. So it would be a complicated process. Not impossible, but it would be complicated and I think more expensive than people might think.
Let's move on now to Ken on line 2. Welcome to the show, Ken.
Oh, thanks for taking my call, Nellie. Mike, I just been trying to make sense out of why the oil companies or the big oil companies are so reluctant to build the pipeline, and it seems to me it's really fairly obvious that at the current levels of supply and demand, the oil companies are making record profits and getting record value for the resource, and if they would increase the gas supply to the Midwest, so that the equations for the supply and demand would fall, they'd actually lose money by building this line. And so I hope when you go back to Juneau, you'll stay with the AGEA proposal from Governor Palin, because I think from the oil company's point of view, there's absolutely no incentive, given the current levels of profit and supply and demand, for them to build the gas line.
Yeah, I'm not sure that it's actual current supply and demand. I think the deal works like this more than anything else. They look 10 years down the road, or however long it would be if they started building the pipeline now and gas was actually flowing, and say to themselves, well, I could probably make more money if I was shipping in Indonesian LNG, which Exxon is doing in a big way, you know. I could probably make more money doing that if I didn't have to compete with this gas going into Chicago.
Right. And
so yeah, I think that there's some financial incentive for them there not to come to the party.
Yeah, if they can keep the supply relatively scarce, they'll keep the prices high.
Well,
if they flood the market with gas, the prices would drop.
Yeah, it's really a question of controlling the growth. The demand for all forms of energy is still going up at a tremendous rate, fueled primarily by economic activity in China. And so it's what they want to do sort of is scale the growth in supply to be just at or just under the growth in demand, I imagine, which is what their economic model looks like.
Yeah, I was just trying to figure out their reluctance to move ahead, even with Murkowski's proposal. They still weren't willing to commit to building it.
Yeah, well, if you talk to them, they tell you that basically it's too risky, which means there isn't enough sort of guaranteed profit in it for them, and that, you know, they've got, you know, they want to have things like tax security and all the rest of that kind of thing. But, you know, it was really frustrating. I was on the Oil and Gas Committee, and we had the AGEA bill in that committee for about 3 weeks, and we had all kinds of people come through and testify, including people from the, you know, it's sort of representing the three main North Slope oil producers, and actually getting them to explain to you what it would take for them to build the pipeline was one of the more frustrating things I ever tried to do. Because, you know, when I was I've been asking people questions practically my entire adult life. I like to think I'm pretty good at it. But those people were on script all the time. You just, you know, you'd try it one way and you'd get an answer. You'd sort of approach it from a different direction. You'd get the same answer. You know, it was impossible to really get very much new information out of those encounters.
There's a lot of skill there, and nobody really wants to be pinned down because they're afraid they're going to be held to their word, and it's like,
yeah, it's, you know, I have a very straightforward attitude about this, Nellie. If those people wanted to be building a gas pipeline, they'd be building a gas pipeline. I don't really care very much about the reasons that they don't want to. You know, what I think is that it would be good for Alaska if we were doing that. And so my goal is to try to figure out a way to make that happen, regardless of the reasons it's not happening. You know, I think that the governor's AGEA approach is the best approach at this time, and so I supported it. I don't know that it necessarily is going to get us a gas pipeline, but it's going to get us closer to one, and that's really all that we can ask at this point.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned on your website that you were not able to get any bills passed.
Yeah.
I want to talk about that. I want to get back to the gas line in a few minutes, but let's talk about that a little bit and kind of some of the things that were your priorities and how, you know, you're feeling now and how this changes your perspective before you go back again for your second session.
Well, I did some things that I didn't ever really think had a chance. Like, I put in a bill pretty early on in the session that would have taken the entire surplus from the current fiscal year and put it into the state savings account, the constitutional budget reserve.
Right.
My argument was, if we didn't do it, it won't be there at the end of the session. We didn't do it, and it wasn't there at the end of the session. We spent it all, you know. So in part, I would have been over the moon if we'd actually done it, but I was just trying to make a point there as much as anything else, which is, as long as you're doing what the state does, which is every time revenues goes up, you spend it all,
sure,
you're never really going to have any kind of sensible plan for your finances. And as I told my colleagues on more than one occasion on the floor of the House, look, guys, we're going to be back here in a couple of years if the voters send us back, cutting out all this stuff we just put in. You know, this is sort of yo-yo budgeting, just doesn't make very much sense. So I did some of that. I've got a couple of bills in right now that I think have got sort of a better chance of working, which are slightly different from that. One, to set up some sort of state officer salary commission to try to figure out really what we should be paying people, both in the executive and legislative branches, and figure it out in a way that's not political, you know, to try and do some sort of even-handed assessment of that and see if we're paying people the right amount or even paying them in the right way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I have some hopes that that bill might actually have a chance of passing next session. You know, I just introduced it right at the end. I've got a bill that tries to come to grips with a disturbing little problem, which is that there are pre-adolescent sex offenders, and that we essentially, by we, I mean the state of Alaska, well, anybody in the state of Alaska, as it turns out, not just the state, but there's nobody in either the criminal justice system or the welfare system or any of those areas that has a way of identifying who those kids are and forcing them to get treatment, you know, which is, you know, I mean, and I'm talking about stuff that if you told me 6 months ago what's going on, I would have said get out of town. That can't right. happen, but it does. And so I'm going to be working, Nancy Dahlstrom and I are going to be working on that bill all interim in the hopes of being able to come up with something that's going to at least be the initial steps in dealing with that mm-hmm. problem.
So,
you know, so stuff like that.
Yeah. So let's talk about that for a minute. What
yeah.
kinds of things are, you know, is there a, is it kind of a statewide issue? Is it?
Well, what we know about that is that there have been a couple of reported cases here in Anchorage, and that there are probably more than a couple that go unreported. And it's likely to be occurring everywhere in the state at some level. You know, part of the problem is since there's really no reporting mechanism, you have no way of knowing how big the problem is. So you don't really know how to scale your response to it. Is it 10 cases a year in the state of Alaska? Is it 100? You know, is it 1,000? Nobody really knows the answer to that question. So part of what I wanted to try to do there is to make sure that we're capturing information about that so that we can figure out really how big a problem we've got. And at the same time, trying to figure out an institutional way of dealing with it
mm-hmm.
so that in cases where parents are unable or unwilling to deal with it, the kids get the help anyway.
Yeah. Is this like violent sexual acts
uh-huh.
or yeah?
Yeah, that's exactly what we're talking about. In the bill that I drafted, it said anything that would be a felony if an adult did it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's primarily a long list of sexual activity that I frankly don't want to get into on the radio.
Yeah. Well, it's really sad to hear that, you know, we have that
yeah.
that's something that we have to consider and
yeah.
take seriously here in this.
Well, the way I got into it is that there was a task force meeting on this here in Anchorage, you know. It had people from the university and some private lawyers and some police officers and representatives of various, you know, welfare and criminal justice agencies all sort of wrestling with this problem. And they did a report and sent it to me. And what they wanted, they thought should happen is that there should be some new agency set up to deal with this with a price tag of about $10 million. And I looked at that and thought, you know, I'm just not going to get the legislature to agree with this. So maybe we need to start smaller and work our way through it. And so that's how mm-hmm. this whole thing developed.
Let's turn now to everybody's favorite subject now of corruption.
Hmm.
There was an ethics bill passed.
Uh-huh.
Some people have said it's meaty. Others have said it's not meaty. How did you feel about it when it finally passed? And how do you feel being in a legislature that where people have been arrested, have been charged with corruption, and some have pleaded guilty, some have pleaded not guilty, but there's a huge power structure that seems to be involved here that it just seems to be boggling people's minds.
Yeah, it's really hard not to be very angry about this. You know, all this stuff happened before I was in the legislature, but, you know, it was still my legislature, just like it's yours or mm-hmm. and your listeners. And people just aren't elected to line their own pockets, you know, and it's got to be particularly bad for the people who voted for the people who have been charged now. because the charges turn out to be proven, if these people are convicted, they'll have given their votes to people who used their support to put themselves in a position not to represent them, but to line their own pockets. Mm-hmm. And that's got to be just absolutely maddening. On the other part of it is, you can't, at least I can't really help feeling sorry personally for a guy like, Vic Coring, who's the sort of the sitting legislator who got popped here. But I'm not very happy with Vic on the other hand either, because of exactly the same stuff. Politicians were held in low enough regard before this happened, and he's taken the job that I'm trying to do and do well, and just thrown mud all over it.
Mm-hmm. It seems like in the last few years, we've just developed a huge black eye. I hate to keep raising the subject of, bridges to nowhere and other things like that. But, internationally, even we've, sometimes not looked very good.
Well, this is what happens. People get into power. They're in power for a while and they decide that the rules don't apply to them, or they write the rules so that they can take advantage of them, mm-hmm. or that they decide that because they're who they are and they know their motives are good, they can do whatever they want. Or because somebody's been a big supporter of theirs for a long time, they owe them something in return, and what they've got to give them is some piece of the government. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of reasons for this, but the main one is that what's the old saying? Power corrupts and absolute power corrupts. Absolutely. And in this case, it's primarily the Republican Party, which has been in power for a long time, and has sort of run into the problems that any political group that's in power for a long time runs into. People start deciding the government's theirs and that they can sell part of it if they want.
Mm-hmm. How high up do you think this is going to go? What's the highest level of government that you think this is going to reach?
There's no way of telling. You read the stuff in the paper about Ted Stevens and you think, well, it's possible it reaches in the United States Senate. Doesn't get much higher than that.
Right. Isn't he like fourth in line?
Yeah, third or fourth. I forget which one it is, and he's been a senator since 1968. He's got a lot of seniority.
Beat Trent Lott or something.
Yeah, he's got a lot of the power that comes with just being there for a long time and knowing everybody.
I think the thing that, I've been having a hard time dealing with is that, on many programs I've said and continue to say that, similar to what you were saying earlier in the program, that there is a lot of basic needs out there that uh-huh. just have not been met.
Uh-huh.
And that's been one way that they have been, is by Ted Stevens
mm-hmm.
earmarking things into the budget that have put, water and sewer systems in Chesbothluck or,
right.
Which otherwise probably wouldn't happen. And, the Stevens family name is held in very high regard in rural Alaska, mm-hmm. and I think people are, reeling from some of the information that's been coming out and not wanting to hear what, may happen next.
Well, and the thing is, so far all we've got are accusations.
Right.
These are charges. They haven't been proved. People get their day in court. They might be proved or they might not. But setting that part of it aside, some of the things we've read show such bad judgment mm-hmm. and such sort of contempt for the proper operation of government that it doesn't make any difference if they're against the law in the end. It's still wrong. So that's sort of the thing I was trying to talk about before. There are things that you can do in a culture that are wrong and not illegal. And some of these things, whether they're illegal or not, are wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who did them need to be ashamed of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to take a lesson from that to remind us that just staying just inside the legal line isn't good enough. You don't want to be sort of on the edges of the ethical playing field. You want to be right out there in the middle.
You are listening to Community Forum on KSKA. Today we're talking with Representative Mike Dugan, fresh back from his first session in the State House. He is from District 25, which is a Spinard area. He's a Democrat. Give us a call if you want to join in the discussion or if you have any questions. Our local number is 550-8433. That's 550-8433 or 1-800-353-5752. We've been talking a little bit about ethics and corruption, things like that. But one of the things that you a lot of people have said and I've heard over the last 20 years or so or whatever has been, oh, you know, you just wouldn't see that when I was a kid or, you know, a few years ago, that wouldn't have been acceptable. Do you think that's something that just happens through the course of the way a culture develops or that things are going to change? Or
well, I don't think that you get much in the way of corruption without money. And up until relatively recently in its entire history, there hasn't been that much money in Alaska. There certainly hasn't been an Alaska government until Prudhoe Bay came in. And that it's then that you begin to develop, I think, the seeds of the kinds of things that we're seeing now. You know, was it better in the good old days? Well, it was different. Mm-hmm. I don't know that people were any more honest fundamentally then than they are now. There was just less around to steal. You know, and I think that that may be a big part of the difference.
The thing that I was kind of curious about is thinking back to the oil pipeline construction, is just the huge amount of money that was flowing and the amazing contracts that were being led and the pace of construction and the home building and the craziness. I mean, heck, if you counted the strip joints alone, If we're going to be looking at, you know, this kind of a future in the consideration of a gas line, does this mean that as a society we need to be even more stringent and firm about saying, you know, we need to draw the line here and not move the line?
Well, I think that, you know, people have a lot of theories about corruption in government. I think the thing that stops it in its tracks is that the voters only elect people that they know to be honest. You know, that doesn't always happen. You know, people don't inquire into candidates' honesty. They're interested in their, you know, position on whether or not they're going to get them a school or what they think about abortion or any of that kind of stuff. You know, and so you don't get the kind of focus that you should have on the honesty of candidates until something like this happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I expect it to be more important for a while. And then, frankly, as long as there isn't, you know, and 5 years, if there's not more of this stuff going on, people kind of forget about it and we'll go start to swing back the other way.
Mm-hmm. I just remember when I was a kid, there was, excuse me, one movie theater in town. It was Archie Ferguson's, the old Bush pilot.
Right.
And, you know, whenever the movies changed, everybody went, of course, because that was, you know, like our only really out of reality entertainment. But our parents were really, you know, strict about what we saw, and like the other night I was watching a movie, it was rated PG-13, and I was shocked at how much sex was in it.
Yeah, the society,
I'm not a prude, but you know, I was shocked at what was in there.
The society has changed a lot, but I think one of the biggest things was that differences is that back when Alaska was more primitive, people paid sort of more attention to who their neighbors were and, you know, kind of what kind of people they were because they needed them more, you know. I mean, the winter was long. Not many people left the state all that much because it was expensive and difficult to get out of here. And they were just sort of – their world was smaller, you know. Nowadays, you sit down, you can watch like 180 channels of cable TV, and it's not at all uncommon that for a child by the time, even from rural Alaska, by the time a child has graduated from high school, for them to have, you know, been like to the lower 48 half a dozen times.
Yeah, that's true.
You know.
Okay, well, everybody's decided to call, so we're going to have to leap into the phones now and see if we can get through most of these before we have to wrap up. So if you want to call in, you're going to have to start dialing now, 550-8433. Harry Crawford on line 4. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, Harry, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. I've got my cousin, and we're out tootling through the Matanuska Valley, showing him Alaska.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. So I thought you might want to talk about repealing the PPT and tax on the gross and maybe putting the dividend in the Constitution.
Oh, yeah. There's
good democratic values.
There's a bunch of good topics there. Thanks for asking. You know, Sarah Palin threatens to have us back there come October, I think, Harry. Or have us someplace come October to look at the PPT. You know, so.
What about that PPT?
Well, I've always said that I never understood why the state of Alaska wanted to get into a contest with the oil companies about who had the best accountants. you know, which is what a profits tax is. You know, there's an old saying in Hollywood that goes, he who takes a percentage of the net gets the worst end of the deal, only they don't say the worst end of the deal. You know, and it's equally true in a situation like this. We should have a gross tax. We should just say, okay, we're going to take, you know, X percent of the profits. You could do it on a sliding scale. You can make exceptions for investment and development. You can do all of that kind of stuff. But this thing where they had this true-up payment and it came up umpty-ump $1 million short because it turns out that they do have good accountants working for the majors should be a lesson to us.
And do you think it's going to go anywhere? I mean, there is going to be an incredible amount of pressure applied. I mean, based on what you've seen in the legislature
so
far.
We're going to have to do something. Even if we go back and pass exactly the same bill, we got to do it because there are too many questions about how did during the time that that bill was being considered. You know, so we're going to have some kind of attention paid to that regardless of the outcome.
Okay, Harry, I know you had some other things hanging on there, but we're going to move on to Willow now and Rhody, I think, about the senior tax relief.
Yes, I just wondered how far that bill was going.
Which one's that?
One way to give seniors some relief with rising property taxes.
And that's the senior property tax exemption bill?
Correct.
Yeah, frankly, I can't answer that question. I lost track of that. I was sort of concentrating on the question of whether or not there was going to be senior care this year, which turned out we dropped the ball on that. So I really couldn't tell you where those property tax relief bills got to.
Okay, well, I'm hoping it gets revisited next session.
Yeah, well, everything that, you know, didn't pass is still alive, so it probably will.
Right.
Yeah.
And one more comment in regard to the Constitutional Budget Reserve, and I will take my answer off the air.
Sure.
And that is there any way that we can change that so it's set up similar to the permanent fund so they can spend the interest and the reserves, you know, instead of spending the whole account down?
Yeah, I think we could do that any way we wanted. The only problem with the CBR is that there's just not, relatively speaking, a lot of money in it. You know, I think the difference is that the permanent fund's approaching $40 billion and the CBR's got something like $3 billion in it.
Right. But if we start saving it, it will increase.
Yeah, that's it. You're exactly right. If we put more money into it, it'll be there when we need it. That's my theory. Whether,
right.
You know, no matter what kind of an investment regimen you have, if you just don't spend the money, it's still there.
Right. Okay, well, I thank you, and I'll let you go on to your next one.
Thanks.
Okay, David on line 10, and welcome to the show.
Mike, question on capital budgeting or the lack thereof. You know, we couldn't help our seniors out, and comparing it to the national, we've got all these earmarks. And we seem to be doing the same thing with our capital appropriation. Is there any hope at all that we might, as a state, be able to develop, say, a five-year capital program with priorities so that projects could be evaluated against themselves as opposed to just whoever's got the most influence and whoever buys off whoever else?
Well, there are capital improvement programs. They don't really compare. For instance, there's one in DOT for roads and public facilities, but they don't really compare to the one over in the Department of Education for schools, for instance, because there's not really any way to evaluate the importance of a school as opposed to the importance of a road. You know, and a lot of the budget is taken off of those lists, you know. So basically, I think they did all the major maintenance on the schools here, and I think it was last year and the year before, but it might have been the 2 years before that, for instance. You know, on these other things, you know, part of it is simply a response to the number of people who come down looking for something, you know.
Do those public opinion messages and emails really matter that much to legislators?
I think that if you're, you know, if you're representing a program or an institution that the legislator thinks is doing a good job, and if you have a reasonable requests, then you're going to get support for that. You know, it takes a whole bunch of maneuvering to get anything very big into the capital budget. And frankly, Nellie, I don't know much about that. I wasn't on the finance committee, didn't really have very much to do with putting that budget together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but there's always going to be a system where there's going to be some discretion there, because if it's not the discretion of politicians, it'll be the discretion of bureaucrats. You know, where does this school go on this list, for instance? You know, how do you decide if it's number four instead of number five or something like that? So mm-hmm. as long as people are making these lists, they're going to have quirks to them. And the only real question is, what quirks do you want them to have?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want them to be the quirks of the people that you can actually go and get and dump out of office if you don't like what they're doing? Or do you want them to be the quirks of some, you know, sort of person that you don't know in, say, the Department of Education or DOT?
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you, even though it wasn't in the House, about the coalition that there was in uh-huh. the Senate, and how, you know, you've been, you're an Alaska boy. How did that change things? Did it seem to smooth things out a little between the two parties, or was there any more hands across the water type relationships? Or,
well, I think the coalitions always tend to go to the middle. You know, what gets thrown out in a coalition is the stuff on the fringes on the far right or the far left, because you don't want to, when you have people in a coalition who've got substantially different political philosophies, you don't want to have a whole bunch of stuff going on that's going to make them, you know, fight with each other,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
you know. And so the good thing about coalitions is that it is really more aimed at kind of centrist policies. You know, the bad thing about them is they never take any risks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if the right solution is a daring solution, they won't do anything daring because, you know, they don't want to have the coalition blow up. And then, you know, somebody who's got like a chairmanship loses his gavel
right.
and his nice office, and they don't want that to happen. You know, and I mean, that's a little more cynical than I really meant to be there. You know, they don't want to lose their ability to affect events by having the coalition blow up. And so, you know, it worked better that way, I think, and it did calm things down. They weren't mm-hmm. anywhere near as mean and partisan as I've seen them in the past. But on the other hand...
That's an understatement.
Yeah, on the other hand, did we do anything very innovative? Uh-uh.
Not daring either. Mm-hmm. Okay, Tom on line 7, welcome to the show.
Hi there. I hope you can hear me, Mike.
Yep, I can.
Oh, good. This was fading for a second. I think you may have just really answered the question. I was going to ask, why is nothing innovative coming out of the legislature? Why do they seem to be acting much more like conventional oil barons of the past, that we produce oil and everything we're going to do is being done with oil, that we've had a fine wind generation demonstration in Kotzebue, and it seems all those kinds of innovative things are waiting until the next session for either funding or even action. Now, I know you just expressed what happens in the coalition, but
mm-hmm.
is there a fundamental philosophy that is a problem here, or is it just conventional politics?
Well, part of it is, you know, the legislative system is designed to kill bills. It's not really designed to pass them. And even the ones that pass have to make it through a fairly rigorous sort of program of you know, being scrutinized.
It goes through
a couple of committees in one mm-hmm. house, and then it's got to go across the floor, and then it's got to go through a couple of committees in another, and back across, and then maybe there's a conference committee. I mean, it takes a lot of, you know, sort of sanding to sand those things smooth. And frankly, I think a lot of the ones that are more innovative get more scrutiny. And so I'm not at all surprised that we didn't pass very many bills in the first session, because not only did we have that process, we did have a coalition in the Senate, and we had a brand new governor. You know, and I hope that the good bills that are going to be there next session pass in that session. But, you know, everything just takes a while. That's, you know, and I'm not at all confident we're going into a 90-day session. I'm not sure how much we get done.
Okay, Steve on line 1, welcome to the show in Wasilla.
Yeah, hi, Nellie and Mike.
Hey, Steve.
Mike, I have a question for you, and I don't know how much you can really answer, but I'm going to ask it anyway. And, you know, I'm one of those Vic Coring constituents.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I have voted for Vic and financially supported him over the years. And, you know, I tell Vic or whenever I've talked to him, you know, there's all kinds of things that I don't agree with you on, but, you know, there are certain things that Vic Coring has been excellent on, like constituent help. And
mm-hmm.
I run a small business, and if I had a problem with the state, Vic Coring would, you know, get down in the dirt with the state and mm-hmm. help me out with my problem, and that's a huge deal to me. But, you know, I'm kind of torn. I was in Wasilla on Sunday and was asked to sign a petition, and, you know, the wording seemed really pretty harsh to me, and I didn't, you know, I the guy's down, and I just hate to kick him, but, you know, is there any way that Vic Coring can be found innocent? I mean, the guy that says he bribed him is a bazillionaire who could, you know, fight this thing in court, and he copped a plea, so how is Vic going to, you know, be found not guilty in this situation?
Boy, I've really got no way to answer that. I just saw a thing in the paper where Vic's lawyer said he needed another 4 months just to look at all the evidence that they say that they've got.
Right.
You know, you like to think that if Vic didn't do it, he'll be acquitted.
How is that possible if the person that says they bribed him pleaded guilty?
Well, it just depends on the facts in the case, I guess. You know, I'm not a lawyer myself, but I don't think that it's necessarily true. Well, the first thing is, I don't know exactly what the guy pleaded guilty to. That is, which specific charges there were. Mm-hmm. There are now, I was going to say four. There are four indicted, but there are only really three that are involved in this particular case. And I don't know whether any of those things that he pleaded guilty to had anything to do with Vic Coring. You know, so it's possible that he'll be that he didn't break the law and that he'll be acquitted. Mm-hmm. You know, how likely is that? Geez, I just don't know.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. It's really hard to speculate about these things, but, I mean, I'm sitting here, and I have an issue that's really important to me that involves the state of Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
Vic has been helping me on it, and I don't think he can help me anymore. And
well, that's the question. You know, the real question for the voters in Vic's district, I think, isn't really did he do it, will he be convicted? Because that's not a question the voters can answer. You know, that's a question that a jury is going to answer at some point. I think the question you have to ask yourself as his constituents is, do I think that he can represent me adequately while he's being tried? I mean, if you're trying to decide whether or not to recall him, which I guess is what's going on out there, right?
Yes.
And, you know, if the answer to that question is no, then, you know, I think it's a perfectly legitimate reaction to say, well, then I need to get myself a new representative somehow. You know,
yeah,
and Vic
that's
is
really the question I
have. Yeah, Vic is saying he's not going to quit. You know, and if you feel strongly that you're not going to get decent representation out there, then I don't think you've got any choice but to recall him. If on the other hand you think he can still be effective as his legislator, then you wouldn't do that.
Okay, John on line 8 in Eagle River, welcome to the show.
Yes, I'd like to know what your view would be on having an audit on the Alaska State Commission for Human Rights on its support or lack thereof state workers. It is a state organization, and what do you think of auditing it? For example, there were 9 human rights violation cases that we know of at the Anchorage Airport, and 4 of them I know are now moved on to Alaska State Ombudsman, and they're 11 years old. And the Ombudsman says, well, they really can't process it because the last administration has sucked off all their money and their personnel and taken away their teeth, so they really can't get on top of corruption in the state of Alaska. And so what do you think about funding and giving teeth to the Ombudsman so they can do their job and get an audit on the Alaska State Commission of Rights to see if are they allowing state workers to win or is there a conflict of interest? I was wondering what your views would be on that.
Well, the Ombudsman works for the legislature, and as far as I know, we gave her, it's a woman named Linda Lord Jenkins, who's actually the Ombudsman. I think we gave her all the money she asked for. So if that's the agency that needs to be involved here, I think that they're capable of doing it. I think that they take a lot of complaints about, you know, government agencies and investigate them, and you know, sometimes they find they're not founded. Sometimes they continue the investigation. You know, that seems to be a system that by and large is working to me. So I think that if you think you've actually got a case there, that that's the first place that I'd try.
Okay, quickly now to Richard here in Anchorage. Welcome to the show.
Howdy. Recently we changed the length of the legislative session.
Uh-huh.
And I'm wondering if, in your opinion, we're better off that way, or is it too short? If it were longer, would they have discussed putting the dividend into the Constitution?
I don't know if you're ever going to get the legislature to put the dividend into the Constitution, you know, which is the only way you're ever going to get it on the ballot. You can't run an initiative on a constitutional amendment. But, you know, it's going to get discussed when there are enough of us who want to see it happen in there in positions to make sure that it gets discussed. So I'm not really looking for anything much to happen there until after the next election. You know, as far as the length of the session goes, I don't know. We're going to try 90 days, and we're going to see. I'm pretty skeptical, I got to tell you, that you know, the idea that people seem to have that somehow making a legislative session shorter is going to give them a better government, I frankly just don't see the connection there.
Yeah. And in light currently, I mean, we're looking at going into a special session,
yeah.
And we've had several special
sessions. Every year, on average, every year since we went to 121 days, actually, is what it turned out to be, we've had a special session.
Mm-hmm.
And what that tells you is that 120 days wasn't working. So how is 90 days going to work better?
It's really hard for me to imagine slicing a whole month off of.
Yeah, but we'll see. You know, that's what the voters decided they wanted. You know, I was in a big fight over the cruise ship initiative, trying to defend the idea that the voters get to make these decisions by initiative, and you just got to live with them for 2 years. I'm willing to give it my best effort, but I'm not going to be at all surprised if it doesn't work out well for the state.
We're kind of running out of time here now, so I just wanted to give you a little chance to say a few words about your hopes for the future. I mean, we've talked about a lot of really horrendous subjects here today, and people are getting more and more used to hearing them. But what's our future looking like here in Alaska?
Well, you know, I think that we've still got a chance to do some really great things here. You know, we have, relatively speaking, a lot of money for the size of our population. We've made some real progress in a lot of areas. You know, there are places in rural Alaska where they don't use honey buckets anymore where they used to. You know, that we're making progress in getting clean water to people. In a place like Anchorage, we've improved the sort of the school facilities just massively since I was in high school here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we're doing some things a lot better. What we're not doing very well, I don't think, is preparing for the future. You know, we're doing okay. You know, if you look 12 months down the road, we're doing fine. And maybe if you look 2 years down the road, we're doing fine. But if you look 5 years down the road or 10 years, basically there's no way to tell what the shape of that is. And I'm hopeful that we're going to not just be sticking our fingers in the holes in the dike here in the next session, but that we're going to be able to take a look at questions like, do we have an integrated vocational education system that's going to work? You know, can we get a financial plan that's going to work for us? Some things where my grandkids aren't going to have to wrestle with these same problems that I am.
Well, hopefully not. Thank you, Representative Mike Dugan, for being here today. I know you're
Thank you, Nellie.
busy, and I hope our listeners have a chance to talk to you again. It's been great talking to you. I'll see you again next week on KSKA's Community Forum.